welcome to the third ever episode of the Ick Theology Podcast, where we're going to talk about more worship lyrics, what we like about them, what we don't like about them, and also other church things. I'm Tom Zlatney.
I'm Steve McCauley.
And I'm Blair Major.
So what are we starting with, guys? Let's get right into it.
So we're starting with, I've forgotten what we're starting with.
We just talked about this 30 seconds.
Damn it, Blair.
Oh. Well, I think, aren't we starting with your challenge from last week?
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Your challenge at the end of this really last good. Week, and you...
This is good beer.
It is good. It's imported from Vermont, which generally means very, very good beer.
There's like special ice cream hidden in it?
Special ice cream.
I think it's, actually, it's a mixture of rye and hops that makes it so special. It's very, very, very good. I'm glad you enjoy it. But yes, last week Blair gave us a challenge of listening to some worship music and looking at an icon.
Yeah, while listening to it.
While listening to it and how that went. So, I mean, Tom, did you do the challenge?
I did. And it was weird for me.
Yeah.
Because I don't look at icons usually. Like, it's just not a spiritual practice I have.
Yeah.
So I was kind of trying to maintain eye contact with a drawing of Jesus for like 3.5 minutes.
Was he undressing you with his eyes?
It felt like it a little bit.
He was, I know, right?
Trying to give me a sloppy wet kiss and I wasn't into it.
Or an unforeseen kiss, which would...
Sloppy wet.
Okay.
Yeah, yeah. But I think I enjoyed the song a lot. And I think that trying to listen to it in a serious way kind of helped put me into a space of worship while listening to it instead of just sort of passively like, you know, it's there in the background.
Yeah. So we should maybe introduce the song that we were listening to. Because we tried to tie the two things together, right? To do the iconography at the same time as sort of feature song. And this week's feature song is Good Good Father, which is super popular, written by a House Fires group, which I think are in Atlanta. They're like one of these home group church worship things that just got really, really popular. And this song was one of the big ones that really made them famous. It was made famous, though, not by them, but made by... our favorite Chris Tomlin. So I'll just read the lyrics and then maybe you can talk a little bit more about your Jesus undressing you with his eyes while listening to the song.
Sure.
So most people who are listening probably know this song, but if not, it's a very simple song. It says, I've heard 1,000 stories of what they think you're like, but I've heard the tender whispers of love in the dead of night. And you tell me that you're pleased and that I'm never alone. You're a good, good father. It's who you are. It's who you are. It's who you are. And I'm loved by you. It's who I am. It's who I am. It's who I am. It sounds even dumber when I just read it.
Mm-hmm. Right? Someone clearly has some self-esteem issues.
Yeah. Second verse. I've seen many searching for answers far and wide, but I know we're all searching for answers only you provide. Because you know just what we need before we say a word. You're a good, good father. It's who you are. It's who you are. It's who you are. And I'm loved by you. It's who I am. It's who I am. It's who I am. And then the third verse, because you are, oh, sorry, the third verse isn't on here.
I guess it's more of a bridge.
Well, there's actually a third verse.
Oh, is there a third verse?
Yeah.
Oops.
So maybe you can read the bridge while I'm pulling up the third verse.
Sure. The bridge is because you are perfect in all your ways. You are perfect in all of your ways. You are perfect in all of your ways to us. And you maybe repeat that a second time. You are perfect in all of your ways. You are perfect in all of your ways. You are perfect in all of your ways to us. Did you find it?
Yeah, that was, thank you for drawing that out. It's great. And then after the bridge, the third verse is, oh, it's so undeniable. I can hardly speak. Peace so unexplainable. I can hardly think. As you call me deeper still, as you call me deeper still, as you call me deeper still into love, love, love. You're a good, good father. It's who you are. It's who you are. It's who you are. And I'm loved by you, it's who I am, it's who I am, who's who I am. So that's the song.
I wonder whether many Coptic Christians at the moment will be singing about it's a piece so unexplainable.
Oh, well, that's, I can hardly think. I think that's too soon, Steve.
Well, it's not too soon. I think it's just something that, you know, like, it's all great to talk about this stuff when, you know, not much is going on, but can you really sing that if things are actually happening?
Hmm. Right, and you're thinking of the third verse, and it's a piece, undescribable. Yeah.
I don't like that I thing they've got going on in that third verse.
So that, I hate it too. But it's a deeper problem. It's not just I. Have you ever tried to sing this song, Tom?
No.
It's almost impossible unless you spend hours trying to figure out how to sort of fit the intonation of the horrible lyrics with, well, not horrible lyrics, as in like I have other things to say about the lyrics in terms of content, but the way that the lyrics are written, they don't, there's no rhythmic matching naturally with the, what, like the beat, like the regular rhythm of the guitar.
Huh. Is this another case of something like How He Loves, where really it wasn't really meant to be sung in churches, but someone just sort of commandeered it for that purpose?
I don't think so. I think it's probably the opposite, because this is, like I said, the House Fires group. And as I understand them, like I haven't deeply researched them, is that they are just a group of people who got together in a house and just started doing like worship sessions together.
Burn the house down.
So worship sessions in a church is different. Like saying a house is very different than worship, you know, sessions with 200 people and an actual church, right?
Yeah.
That's a good point. And so, yeah, you're probably right in some ways, is that the lyric, like the weakness of the lyrics, that they're so hard to kind of get. Obviously, it was something that was spontaneously written, right? Something that kind of like emerged out of their group meeting. Somebody would sing this over and over again, and then it turned into a song. And that's probably why it doesn't feel like a song that was written by a professional, right?
Right, yeah. Yeah, well, that's it. Like it, there's a lot to it lyrically that feels kind of choppy.
Yeah, and it's really choppy.
Yeah.
But in the
the chorus, like rhythmically, it's you're a good, good father. It's who you are. It's who you are. It's who you are. And I'm loved by you. It's who I am. It's who I am. It's who I, like it feels very aggressive and kind of like they're chasing the beat almost.
Yeah. Yeah, for sure. And the verses too, I think it's just hard. Like the second verse, when I sang this in church not too long ago, like a month ago, and I had to practice this verse for so long to figure out where to breathe, which is, so clearly it was not somebody who was professionally writing the song. And,
you know. Right.
That sounds just like a bad song choice.
That I think it's a good song though. That's the thing. I like the song for other reasons. Because I think the simplicity is really great. Mm-hmm. And I think the message of just reminding ourselves, God is a good, he's good and he's also a father. I think reinforcing that in our minds and the simplicity of that is really great. And also reinforcing the fact that we are who we are fundamentally is just loved by God. We really don't have any worth outside of that. So, I mean, I think that that's great. Like there's a simplicity about it that I really like. I think it's got sort of a good sort of message. But at the same time, I think you're also right. It's a poor song choice because I'm struggling as a leader who spent hours to sing this. Mm-hmm. So I think that people in the congregation have a hard time, especially with the verses. The chorus is easy, though.
Yeah. Well, and the bridge is the part that I think is great musically. Like it's easy to sing. It's repetitive enough that people pick it up really quickly. It doesn't have anything too weird going on rhythmically. It's a perfect bridge.
It's a perfect bridge.
It's a perfect bridge.
Yeah.
I would drive across it and fear nothing.
Back and forth, back and forth.
Yeah, just all day.
All day.
Yeah.
So I'm looking at the first line to this song. You know, I've heard 1,000 stories of what they think you're like. It's a great way to start off. It's like, you know, Blair, loads of other people have told me loads of things about you. But, you know, I know, like, yeah, I've heard these tender whispers of love from you. You know, it's sort of like, it kind of sets these things up pretty badly. It's like, you know, I've heard loads of things that you're really not awesome, but reality, I found out that you really are. It's not really much of a compliment, really, is it?
And I don't just whisper them. I whisper them in the dead of the night.
In the dead of the night. I know. God doesn't speak during the day, definitely.
You know, I hadn't thought about that as kind of a creepy lyric until just now, but it's kind of a creepy lyric.
It is, but I think that I get it, right? I get that. It's not creepy at the same time. Like, if you think, what does he mean by dead of night or she? I don't know who wrote this. I assume it's he.
Yeah.
We can talk about that maybe later. But, okay, so the dead of night is probably like, you know, you're up, you're like, you know, you're in the torment. It's like a torment, a deep dead of night, you know? Mm-hmm. And then you hear God whispering, or like a tender voice whispering something to you. Like, I feel like, okay, now that's not creepy. Like, I get
it.
No. Right?
But you could also look at this first verse as like a letter to a woman that, you know, has a bad rep, but you know her to be better than that.
And you've heard the tender whispers in the dead of the night.
And she tells me that she's pleased and that I'm never alone.
Oh, she's pleased.
Yeah. That's good. See, a little weird when I start calling her a good, good father, but.
Daddy issues to a whole new level. What kind of girls do you date, Tom? So, second verse. I don't mind this verse.
Yeah.
Because it's just searching for answers, and God provides answers for us.
It's a little bit, again, creepy at the start. So, yeah, sort of like talking about all these other people, you know, at least like, God, all these other people are slagging you off, and they're searching all these other places. But, hey, you know, actually, sort of, you know, you'd love me. You don't love those other people. You love me, and you know, you give me answers. And that's kind of great, you know.
It doesn't say you love me more than them, though, in the verse.
I think it's implied.
It's implied.
It's implied. I mean, does it doesn't explicitly say God loves other people other than me in that song, right?
But it's saying we, because you know just what we need before we say a word.
Yeah.
Well, but it also says, you know, you tell me, you know, that you're pleased. It doesn't say it tells anybody else.
Right.
Hmm. So God's willing to provide answers to anyone, but only love to you.
Exactly.
Oh, let's see how this goes.
Yeah, that's how special I am.
So I think that the third verse maybe even digs this deeper into a hole. When I led this, I just dropped the third verse because I don't like it. And I'm curious what you guys
think.
Can
we actually call it a third verse, by the way? Because it doesn't actually fit rhythmically or lyrically with the other two. It's a third, I don't know, thing. I don't know what you call it in music.
It tries to follow the same melody as the verses. So I would call it a verse. But you're right. It's sort of like a bridge type verse because it's not doesn't really match the same poetically. I don't think you could even describe the first two verses really as following any real poetic structure. But the third one deviates even further away from it. So I think you're right. Is it sort of like it's sort of a verse, but it's not really a verse. And it comes after the bridge. They're just sort of like throwing this other thing in there. Mm-hmm. But I really don't like it. I'm curious what you guys think. So we'll just read it again real quick. Yeah. Oh, it's love so undeniable. I can hardly speak. Peace so unexplainable. I can hardly think as you call me deeper still into love, love, love. So what I don't like about it, well, it's almost everything. Let's be serious.
All of it, yeah.
Love so undeniable. Nothing wrong with that. Peace so unexplainable. It feels like it's just an emotive like trying to connect to some emotion, right? Yeah. And so it's all like really focusing on this inexplicability, but saying I can hardly think. Like, so when we encounter God, then it seems he's suggesting that we can't think, you know, we can't explain anything, that it's just this sort of being drawn deeper into love. Like, I feel like there's just so much emptiness in that type of a verse. How does it strike you guys?
I think I agree. I think that my bigger issue is just that it's kind of a crappy verse and I'd drop it altogether. You know, not even digging into the issue of that one line. I don't like anything about the verse.
Yeah. Well, and we did drop it. Yeah.
Yeah.
But like the I, like that's them just trying to make it fit with the melody lines of the first.
Totally. And barely managing to, and like, I don't know. This is one of those like classic cases of not being totally sure how to write a song with any kind of structure, thinking you have a vague structure in the first verse, but not being too married to it, kind of slightly deviating from it in the second verse, and then like just telling the whole structure to fuck off in the third verse. And I'm not into it. I like some kind of structure.
Well, I think that the problem for me is that it doesn't really commit to losing the structure. Like, I think it is really good in a song sometimes when you see, like, the melody or the structure change. But it has to be intentional, right?
Yeah.
Here, it's like they're trying, but they're kind of half-heartedly trying.
Well, that's it. It's like, it feels like they've got one foot out the door of the structure and the other foot in the door. But neither of them in a good enough way to make it work. And
yeah. And also, because we decided last time that Oceans is, in some ways, the standard of a good contemporary worship song. This reflects the wrong movement. If you're standing on deep waters, this one's talking about you drawing me deeper still. The other one is standing on top of the water. So I think that this one sings itself.
I think really that after Delirious is Deeper, that we shouldn't be allowed to use that imagery in the worship songs anymore. I think it was kind of pinnacled at that moment in the late 90s.
Well, I mean, we can talk about deeper in more detail. Deeper later. But they confuse their metaphors in that one too, because it's like right after that it's like I want to run, I want to fly to you. It's like, well, I thought you were going deeper. What are you flying for now?
You can do both.
No, you can't, Steve.
Like, I don't know, deeper into the sky.
You can't run and fly at the same time. Those use different
Well, you kind of have to run before you start flying, right? I mean, you need to take off.
Maybe British birds have to run before they fly.
I don't know. I think most birds can just kind of like...
And just to describe to our listeners.
I think they get what I'm... You
kind of look like a maybe a mermaid trying to fly.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, you know, they kind of just like jump and they're into it.
Yeah.
Mermaid.
Big birds.
Yeah.
Little birds don't even have to do that. They just sort of start flapping and away they go.
Yeah. Well, that's it. There's always like a little bit of a hop. They got to hop. There's no run.
And they're definitely not like swimming in water and then all of a sudden start flying. Like
some fish are.
Well, fish are, but not birds. Like
some birds are.
And if you're a fish and you're not going deeper if you're going to fly out of the water, right? Like you're actually doing the undeeper thing.
You
got to
pick up some speed before you break the surface, right?
No, but you're not going deeper. You're going undeeper.
Undeeper?
Undeeper. That's what they should have called
it. I feel when you swim down so that you can
I want to be undeeper, but I don't know how to fly. No, swim flies later.
Flies later.
It's too confusing.
Maybe I could hop. Maybe I could fly to you.
Maybe I could do a little bounce to take off.
I could do a little hop. I could do a mermaid flop. So yeah, we definitely are going to have to spend more time talking about Delirious is deeper, and I think a lot of other Delirious songs.
Of course.
So maybe next week will be the Delirious episode.
Yeah, I think that
is one episode enough, Tom.
It could be
the first Delirious episode of so many
of a series. But so this is the thing, just to sort of foreshadow what my thoughts I think are going to be when we actually get to it. By the measure that we've been critiquing all the songs we've talked about so far, I think that it'll be a slaughterhouse going over Delirious songs, like we just did with Deeper.
Sure.
But at the same time, there are such good songs, and sure, I love them, and I will feel so sad to mock them.
Well, and that's kind of like coming back to Good Good Father, that's kind of how I feel about this song, is that there's a lot we can kind of take from it. We can take a lot of shots at it. But it's also like a decent song. Like I was listening to it and I was like, yeah, I actually really like this. Mm-hmm. There's just lyrics I would get rid of and structure things that I would fix. But, you know.
See, I never like it in the song. Going back to that bridge, like the third not verse, I felt it really difficult when the song lyrics, they want to tell you that you're experiencing love, you know, so unexplainable and peace so undeniable or whatever. It's sort of like trying to convince everybody, by the way, everything's really great. And if you're not feeling quite this amazed as we are, you kind of maybe have a problem right now.
There's something wrong with you.
Yeah.
I think this is a function or an effect of writing this during like a really intensive spiritual gathering of people. Because it was probably really sincere at the time. And I think it probably really spoke something about the common experience at the time. But yeah, I agree with you. When you put it in this form and now you're going to just sort of sing it on Sunday morning, it seems like all of a sudden, you know, we are having an experience of God's love that's inexplicable. And if you're not having this, then oh boy. Right?
But maybe people need to show the wisdom that you showed, Blair, by dropping that verse. Like, you know, worship leaders should do a higher job, a more passionate job of trying to filter the worship lyrics, picking things more carefully and understanding the context in which they're saying things.
Well, the fun thing is that even when I searched the lyrics on Google, it cut off that third verse two words.
They knew.
Point where I thought "you are" was just a thing that you like go out on at the end of the bridge, because I didn't know about the third verse when I was printing it. I was just like, oh, the "you are" that's left at the bottom of this lyric sheet is literally just like a, you know.
If you do go to the actual bottom of the lyrics, if you expand the Google "see more lyrics" box. Right. I find the last line's a little bit creepy, because it talks about that you are perfect in all of your ways. It's who you are. It's who you are. It's who you are. And I am loved by you. You are perfect in all of your ways. It's who I am. It's who I am. It's who I am. Now, perfect in who I am is sort of a bit too like close together there in those lyrics. Technically, it's God who's perfect, but there's a little weird juxtaposition.
I wonder if it was like perfectly translated from a live recording.
Yeah,
because I know when I've been practicing this, I might have done this when I actually led it in church. I don't remember. Oftentimes, I would catch myself singing, "You are a good, good father. It's who I am. It's who I am. It's who I am."
Well, I think you're a good father, too.
Well, I might be, but I mean, it's sort of like kind of messes up the whole point of the song, right? And I'm loved by you. And it's usually after, when I get to and I'm loved by you, I'm like, oh, crap, I just used the line I'm supposed to use there. So it might have been, because I've seen this before with the Apple radio thing. They'll have lyric tabs, so they'll actually provide lyrics oftentimes there. But sometimes it's exactly what they say. So if there's like a little hmm-ha, that'll right. be in there too. They just have like a computer program just typing it out for you. So maybe that's what happened here. Maybe it was a live recording and he just wasn't paying attention to what he was singing, but it wasn't intended to be that way.
Well, it's also possible that they were singing the two parts over each other, right? Like, you know, you've got him singing the bridge on repeat and like the backup singer singing the chorus and, you know, the lyrics possible. Kind of intermingling.
Intermingling. Yeah.
Yeah.
So what do we think of the song overall? Would we give this one a sloppy wet kiss or would we give it a
Swift
where feet may fail?
I would not throw it in an ocean.
You wouldn't throw it in the ocean?
I wouldn't throw it in the ocean.
Yeah, I think it's good. I like it. You I think it it's a good song.
You throw it in.
And it's loved by you.
Well, I don't know about that.
Inexplicably? It's liked by me. Is it inexplicably good?
It's inexplicably good.
Okay.
Yeah. No, I think it's a good song. I think it's got some weaknesses, but I think overall, like, I don't dislike it.
I think I wouldn't go, like, I like it, and I'll play it again in church. And I think in some ways that's a bit of a standard. If I really find something awful, I just wouldn't play it.
Right.
Right? So I definitely would play this one again, but I would never play the third verse, I don't think.
Yeah.
No. So I feel that there's enough in it that I would say, you know, I'm giving this one an unforeseen kiss. Mm. You know, like, I think it's a good song, but it needs that edit. It needs the edit if you're going to play it.
Yeah.
So.
Yeah, I could give it an unforeseen kiss.
Yeah.
Yep. That sounds good.
Okay.
Sweet.
So there you go. Way to go, House Fires.
Good job, guys.
Unforeseen Kiss Award.
I will say, I actually didn't listen to the Chris Tomlin version. I listened to the Counting Crows version.
Counting Crows? Casting Crowns?
Casting Crowns. This is a mistake I make every time.
Counting Crows are awesome, but I don't think they do this song.
Hey, after Justin Bieber covered I Could Sing of Your Love Forever, anything is possible in this world.
It's true. You never know.
It's true. It's true. I just think it's not sexual enough. But so we didn't. Something we didn't talk about is the iconography thing. Real quick before we move on from Good Father. So I spent a bit of time doing this. I didn't really connect with me because it's about God as Father. Hmm. And the icon I was looking at was an image of Jesus.
Yeah.
And it felt kind of like disjointed in that experience. So I don't think that one thing, I don't think the iconography can be used as really like an absolute way of really telling if a song's a good song or a bad song.
Yeah.
I think it really is contextual. It'll really help with some songs, but maybe not with others. Mm.
Yeah, I think I had a similar thing where there were a couple moments where anytime it got to the chorus, I'd be looking at Jesus's face, hearing you're a good, good father. And I'm like, well, I'm sure he can pass on the message. But, I mean, there's no icons of God as Father, as far as I am aware.
I'm not enough into iconography to say.
I mean, God is, in Jewish thought, is famously an iconic. You don't do icons of God the Father, right?
Well, but you do. The ultimate icon being Jesus himself.
Sure, yeah. But I couldn't separate that when I was, like, looking at it. So while it did help me kind of stay in a space of worship because I was, you know, I mean, it's like he's watching you, right? It's hard to get distracted when you know that Jesus is watching you listen to music. You're like, all right, Jesus, I'm focusing. So that helped. But I don't know that, you know, it helped for anything more than just being a visual reminder.
It didn't really change the experience of the song per se, like itself.
But. Like, I probably would have gotten the same thing out of just being really committed to keeping that music video tab open and watching the music video.
Right. Right.
The other problem was, looking at all the icons of Jesus, I'm not really sure what song would really fit them. I mean, I felt that, I mean, I started listening to some other songs as well, and lots of things. I saw like an icon of Jesus sitting on a throne, listening to songs about, you know, another delirious song, Majesty, or the David Crowder, you know, All This for a King, the songs of, you know, kind of Jesus being a king. And it's more powerful if you're looking at Jesus' kingship or looking at Jesus being a king. You want to look at really icon of the cross rather than Jesus sitting on a throne, a typical kind of image. It's like, what kind of king is he? And am I actually worshipping here? Is it just some random guy on a throne with a halo? It doesn't really tell me anything about him.
Right.
actually what it's going to do. I felt looking at icons of the cross always most helpful.
Yeah, or there's one that I have as the backdrop for my computer, and it's not as sort of like hollowed picture of Jesus. It looks much more human, and I really, really like that one. I'll send it to you guys.
Sure.
So the one song that I have done the iconography thing with and have really enjoyed it is a song by Hillsong, Hillsong United, called, or Hillsong Worship, I guess, called Behold. So it goes, it has three parts to it, the three verses. One is focused on God the Father, the second is on God the Son, the third is on the Holy Spirit. And the verse that really grabbed me is the second one. Well, maybe I'll just read the whole thing really quickly. It won't take that long. So it starts off, "Behold the Father's heart, the mystery he lavishes on us as deep cries to deep. Oh, how desperately he wants us. The things of earth stand next to him like a candle to the sun. Unfailing Father, what compares to his great love?" So very majestical idea of God. Then the next verse is, "Behold his son, the lion and the lamb given to us. The word became a man that my soul should know its savior. Forsaken for the sake of all mankind, salvation is in his blood. Jesus Messiah, the righteous, died for love." Love? I thought it was us. Anyways, the righteous died for us. "It wasn't over, for he is the risen one. Then sings my soul, how great your love is." And then it does the Holy Spirit one after that. But I don't know. There's something about like that Father. Every time I've listened to that song while looking at this picture, this image of Jesus, when it gets to that part and it starts talking about him, it really kind of, I was going to say penetrates me, but it really gets me. Like it really strikes a chord really deep. And that's why I wanted to share that, because I thought, oh, maybe this could actually have that same type of effect in other contexts as well. But maybe it's because it was like framing the son next to the father, and it just sort of somehow is like, it really grabbed me, like, oh, this is who this guy is supposed to be.
Right.
And it really made sort of sense somehow that, oh, there's actually this guy who was this really important person, that all of this happened, and that allows me to be friends with God in some way, right? Mm. So it was a really great experience, and that's what I want to share with you guys.
Yeah, for sure. And I think that, like, with any kind of visual aid to worship, there's a value to it, I think, only if it's been thought through and works well, right? I mean, maybe that sometimes it's serendipitous that it works well without, like, forethought, but, like, when you look up, like, lyric videos for worship songs on YouTube, half of them are just lyrics and the other half have, like, you know, scenic backgrounds and pictures of people crying and stuff, right?
Lots of flowers. I've seen lots of flowers and birds.
Lots of flowers and birds too. Yeah. Crying birds and flowery backgrounds and, you know, all that standard sort of...
Birds running before they fly.
Vaguely emotional.
Hoping.
The birds going deeper.
Yeah. Just really deep birds. Really, we're talking deep. Pelican deep.
That sounds like it could be a porn video.
That's the porn parody of Pelican Brief.
Is it actually?
Pelican Brief porn parody is just Pelican Briefs. But yeah, so usually, like, you know, those music videos have, like, kind of your typical, you know, pictures that are supposed to conjure up some kind of emotional feeling, but occasionally they do them well, and there's actually, like, you know, they work really well and they flow really nicely, and that's how you can tell who's just like a youth pastor and who's actually a video editor.
Because no youth pastor would be able to do a good job with,
well,
that.
You know what I mean? Like, you can tell who the church was just like, hey, you're young, can you, like, put some pictures on this worship music, and who actually, like,
I really used to enjoy doing that. And then one day someone came to me and said, yo, I really hate it when, you know, there's a song about, you know, a fire and someone puts a fire as a background. I thought, oh, yeah, I always do that. Yeah, I'm just not as innovative enough to do this well, I guess.
That's awesome. This is something that bothers me about the church that we go to, Tom. Hmm. The background for the PowerPoint.
Oh, I know.
It's awful.
And it's just blue.
It's just blue fading to black.
Yeah.
Can't we have some pictures and some, like, more interesting images? Like, it doesn't have to be really flashy, but just, like, pick an image that might even, like, in a really loose way connect with the theme of the day, and just put that as the background for the whole, for everything. Why not?
Yeah. I think you've just voluntold yourself to do it.
I was going to say, you could probably make that happen if you were willing to put some work in.
Do You think so? Probably. I feel like it's done on purpose and...
Maybe. Yeah, I don't know. It'd be worth bringing up with Trevor.
Yeah, I should.
Yeah.
I will. If you're listening to this, Trevor, we're going to talk later.
Trevor, you've probably already talked because this is not coming out until a while after you recorded it.
Next week, Blair will tell you how that conversation went.
Okay, so what's next on the agenda, guys?
Next on the agenda is Simple Plans Passion.
Simple Plans. Simple Pursuit, you mean? Okay, so this is a song that I wanted us to talk about because it is... I think it really kind of hits the nail on the head of something that is really deep in church, even specifically evangelical church culture, I think. So I'll read the lyrics and then we can start talking about it.
Cool.
Simple pursuit. God, take us back the place we began, the simple pursuit of nothing but you. The innocence of a heart in your hands. God, take us back. Oh, God, take us back to an unswerving faith in the power of your name, a heart beating for your kingdom to reign. A church that is known for your presence again, God, take us back. Nothing and no one comes close to you. Nothing could ever come close. Nothing and no one, it's you and you only. Nothing could ever come close. Keep our hearts real. Keep your grace close. You're bringing us back. You're bringing us home. To an unswerving faith in the power of your name, a heart beating for the king, for your kingdom to reign. A church that is known for your presence again, God, take us back. Nothing and no one comes close to you. Nothing could ever come close. Nothing and no one. It's you and you only. Nothing could ever come close. To an unswerving faith in the power of your name, a heart beating for your kingdom to reign, a church that is known for your presence again, God, take us back. And then the chorus again. Nothing and no one comes close to you. Nothing could ever come close. Nothing and no one. It's you and you only. Nothing could ever come close.
I love the fact that this song has what's called or labeled on the sheet a pre-chorus. I've never heard one of those before.
No?
Really?
No. I've never seen a pre-chorus before.
You've definitely seen a pre-chorus before.
You just didn't know. I've heard a pre-chorus. I probably haven't actually seen it labeled as such. What I really want, though, is a post-chorus. Or maybe a post-post-chorus.
That's called the next verse.
Is a pre-chorus called the previous verse?
And then the chorus exit.
Sometimes there's like a tag at the end of a chorus that you use to kind of go out at the end of the song. Yeah. You could start calling that the post-chorus.
Yes. I like that.
I'm going to start calling that the post-chorus.
And I would, instead of the third verse for Good Good Father, we'd actually call that the post-bridge.
Yeah, I think that's actually probably, that would be, yeah, I'm going to call it the post-bridge from now on, and I don't like the post-bridge.
No, we're getting rid of the post-bridge for Good Good Father.
Because we established the bridge was really good. Okay, you don't need a post-bridge. You don't need that one for ramp. Okay, so anyways, back to Simple Pursuit. What do you guys, how does this strike you guys? I don't want to poison the waters too early.
Mm-hmm. I've got two thoughts. The first one is that I feel like the chorus, I get it, but it also, there's something about nothing and no one comes close to you. Nothing could ever come close in the context of a song where it's also asking for a bunch of specific things to start happening. Feels like maybe a weird choice.
Okay.
I get it. They're not actually contradicting each other, but the language of it kind of feels like a weird thing to me. My other thought is that this feels like something that I hear too often from people of just like, oh, like, you know, things were better before. Like, let's, you know, go back. And I don't like it.
Things are much better before you came to this church, Tom.
Yeah, exactly.
So much better.
So God take us back.
God take us back.
I've been at this church since the beginning.
But that theme of the take us back is what really kind of irks me. Or not right, irks. Yeah. Irks is the wrong word. I think it really caught my attention.
It rubs you.
It rubs me. Yeah.
See, I actually kind of like it. I think I kind of like this more than Good Good Father. I mean, apart from probably the chorus, which I mean, Tom points out, it kind of doesn't really fit in. Rest of the song or the theme, but I kind of like it. It feels like, you know, it's a bit sort of about, it's very typical of worship songs, sort of telling us to strip things away, let's, you know, like forget about everything else around us, everything else is going on, get into a state of worship. And kind of like, you know, Jesus says about come to him like little children, and you know, forgetting all the things that baggage has been built up over the years and try to rediscover sort of that innocence first of all. I think that's not a bad song. It's not a bad song to do in a worship session anyway.
Yeah, I mean, I think I know what you're saying, and I don't disagree with that sentiment, but I suspect that it is meaning something else. I think it's thinking about going back to either like an Acts 1 church, you know, like let's go back to like this actually pure community, and whatever we have today has sort of been corrupted over time, and, you know, more theology is bad, right? And it sort of implies something about that, like the ways that we've grown and how we understand God is somehow always going to be an error.
I think that's the sad thing about the song, really, because I mean, if you look at like the first verse, it's talking about, you know, God take us back to the place we began, the simple pursuit of nothing but you. It's very much, okay, let's take us all back to, you know, almost when we first became Christians, when we, you know, really focused on you and you were really important to us in our lives. Let's make sure we get back to that state. And that's cool. But then, yeah, it's like, okay, the pre-chorus then it talks about, you know, take us back to a church that is known for your presence again. We're just like, oh, right, okay. How does that, like, when was our church, like, when was it better in the past? It's, you know, is it this Acts 1 thing that it really was everything was great? Like, when did it really go, like, it's really weird to talk about something going wrong, like, almost the church isn't as good as it was. It's okay for me to say, like, well, I need to, like, be better at myself. I feel it's a bit strange to, in that case, well, the church was better back then.
Right.
Yeah.
Maybe it was, but it feels a bit of a strange thing to sing in a worship song.
Well, that's the thing. And it feels like, that's a sentiment that wouldn't actually really fly if you brought it to, like, a church meeting, right? If you were like, guys, what if we just, like, go back to the way that it used to be? Like, what if we just started doing things, you know, drop our whole structure that we have currently figured out that works fairly well for us and go back to, like, biblical times? Like, that doesn't work. That wouldn't fly.
That sounds like most church meetings, really. It used to be so good the way we used to do it. Everything was perfect then.
Everybody wants things to be the way they are when they're 30, I think. After that, everything just gets worse.
For me, it's 18.
Yeah, okay, so actually, I think as Christians, I feel like for me as well, it's like, you know, when you're a teen and all of these things are new, that's when it's always the best.
And for us as teenagers, delirious were around and in true false. So, I mean, as you're saying, I mean, I don't think how anything could get, you know, really, you know, any better since then. It's clearly gone on downhill.
Well, like the King of Fools album by Delirious is like, that was like the greatest spiritual growth time in my life. So that is, I can turn that album on and I can close my eyes and just love it for the whole hour. Right.
So it is my goal in life, I think, is to be, you know, 80 in a church and just say, I really demand that we sing more Martin Smith songs. Yeah. Like this new, I was going to take us back to, you know, when Martin Smith was, you know, writing brilliant worship lyrics.
We need more trem guitar and soft British accents.
And the guitarist with really fancy goatees.
I mean, I get that, though. Like, that, just coming back to that idea of, like, you know, as Christians wanting to be back to where we were when we were, like, on fire, right? Like, that was high school for me. Was, you know, I came to the church when I was, like, 14. And that was, you know, the perfect time for that because it immediately was like this big thing for me. I was very passionate. Everything was like, oh, like, I've got to be at church all the time. I've got to be doing so many things. I love Jesus so much. And now I've like kind of gotten subdued to a place where I'm like, even when I'm feeling good about the church, I'm like maybe halfway to where I was back then, right? Most of the time,
God take you back. God take you back.
That's it. Like, I want Jesus to take the wheel and do a little U-turn. And yeah,
I think that, so like, even taking me back individually, I have a hard time accepting that as the way that, like, as an okay or a positive way to think about a worship song, or thinking about how we should be framing our spiritual journey and our spiritual development.
Right.
So if we're always looking back, it's sort of like once we go through things and we've come where we are, like there is no back. Like there is no place to go back to. And I think that sort of just reminiscing on the past and you know, that nostalgia, I think it can be really poisoning because then you always feel like you're failing some imagined world that happened before.
Yeah. Well, I mean, it's like with any relationship, right? You have the sort of honeymoon period. You have that time when it's like, oh, everything is new and exciting and really great. And if you try to hang on to that once it just naturally goes away, it's actually more destructive than if you say, okay, well, like, we're past that and now we're in sort of the better time where it's not all exciting all the time, but there's substance and we have to work through things and we have to be actually actively trying to enjoy this, right?
And I think that's the main point is substance. Substance doesn't really exist in that nostalgic state.
Yeah.
You know, it can be profound, and I'm not questioning that, but I think that's just not, it's not real, right? And it's you can't live there. You know, life is sad, and sometimes life is boring. Yeah. And sometimes you just don't really feel all that jazzed about church or your faith. You don't feel terribly close to God. But I think that what we need to do is we need to find a way to think about Christian living and Christian faith that actually incorporates those things, that's a part of our journey, is a meaningful part of our journey, you know? And there's some theologies that do that. Like there's some great old books, St. John of the Cross, right? The Dark Night of the Soul, and reflecting on these feelings when you feel completely disconnected in your faith as actually some of the most important moments of your faith.
Yeah.
Because that's when you really develop faith. So faith isn't sort of like knowing that God is real, but sometimes faith is still living as if God is real when you don't feel like he's real.
Right.
You know? So yeah. I think that there's something kind of backwards about it where faith has to be something that's obvious and clear. It's like, well, then it's not really faith then. It's not like really tested. It's not tried. It's not developed. It's not a deep, intimate relationship with God.
Yeah. And I think that like part of that also is like a psychology that we have built into us now because of the media that we consume, where like if you watch, you know, like, if let's say you binge watch all of, I don't know, Frasier in the course of like a couple of weeks, you crave the highs, right? It's everything has to be like the highs and lows. All the TV that we watch, all the movies we watch, we consume them, and it's like, you know, there's some normal stuff happening for a while, but the things that excite us, the things we enjoy, are the moments when it gets really intense, either for a good reason or a bad reason. And in real life, it's just not like that. Real life doesn't actually have, like, you know, planned out arcs where every 22 weeks something really exciting happens to you. Or, like, if you're watching stuff in a day every 4 hours, right? Real life is like, yeah, every once in a while something really exciting will happen, but you've got to get used to, like, living in sort of the medium, right? And if you're constantly chasing either the next high or, like, feeling like if it's not a high, it's got to be the lowest thing possible, you're never going to be happy. And so you have to actually, like, you know, when you're not in that high place, you have to be willing to be sort of in the middle. You can't feel like the middle is the bottom because it's not, unless you're at the bottom.
Yeah.
But there's a difference, right?
Yeah.
And I think if you're constantly chasing the high, the middle feels like the bottom. So don't chase the high.
And I think this can also be tied sort of theologically into maybe a theology of the incarnation and expectation of who God is and what God is going to do. Well, I mean, that's, I think, a pretty obvious thing with Jesus, too. He might not have been the way that people would understand God appearing at that time in that place to save Israel and the world, because he was just like a whatever guy from who knows where, and then he died.
Right.
Right. But that, like we believe as Christians, that is actually the disclosure of God's glory and of God's great plan. So in a way, it's like, you know, God is in, he's really trying to grab the mundane there, right? He's really trying to say that it's through that's where we can break through to something that's really great and really transformative. Like, I mean, sure, you could be a king and you can come like in all your splendor and overthrow and things and, you know, do that. And, but it's like, that's too expected, right? Because then it misses, you know, 98% of what life actually is. And actually like the really deep, hard things that we experience on a day-to-day basis. So when we think Jesus is actually the appearance of God in the mundane, then I think we can look at this song and we can say, oh, maybe we really missed the point.
Yeah.
I'm wondering if you could write a worship song that celebrates the mundane.
Yeah, but nobody would sing it, I guess.
Huh. I mean, because I feel this song has the same problem, right? It's a little bit the same problem as Good Good Father in that, I don't know what we're calling it, post-bridge, where it talks about, yeah, the love so undeniable stuff. Again, it's sort of portraying this thing where everything was perfect and you should have had this perfect thing or have it now. And that's really what you're searching for as Christians. I mean, maybe we have to sing that. As you said, no one would sing songs like talking about the mundane, but that's somewhere where we're going kind of wrong, because at least, you know, you're talking about the books. I mean, I'm always a big fan of Adrian Plass, who I think as a 10-year-old, when I first read his books, maybe realized that Christian life, you know, it wasn't about these, you know, super Christians who seemed to, you know, hear from God every single day and, you know, were waving banners in churches and always looked very, very suspiciously happy. Like, that wasn't really what Christian life was all about. Christian life was about being an ordinary guy who went to church on Sunday and kind of did stupid things very often and never really felt close to God. but sort of managed to somehow stumble through and do things that were glorifying God and getting building up faith anyway. And it's like, oh, right, actually, this represents something much more of what ordinary life actually is like. But yeah, I don't know how we could actually put that into a worship song.
Yeah.
Maybe Oceans is slightly more similar to that, like in terms of it's talking more about ups and downs a little bit more.
But it's still, I mean, I agree that Oceans is doing that, but it's still, maybe there is sort of a curse in artistic expression that requires, because Oceans is talking about like, oh, it's so dark and I'm so sad and it's so painful.
Well, yes, right? It goes a bit too far the other way, right? That's the point. We do run that risk. Some worship songs do that. It's like everything is terrible. I mean, you mentioned earlier the St. John of the Cross and the Dark Night of the Soul. What if you're not really having a dark night of the soul? You're just having an ordinary week at work. You know, like, where is God in that? And what am I going to sing about on a Sunday morning?
Yeah, I was trying to think of a worship song that, like, addresses sort of medium places, right? And, like, stillness brought me to In the Secret, in the quiet place, in the stillness you are there. But then I was thinking about it, and, like, that song kind of starts there, but then just goes to places of, like, so, like, I want more of you, God. Like, let's have more. Yay, more. And we're reaching for the highest prize. And it's like, oh, fuck this. All right.
Okay. Maybe a song, hey, I feel like, okay, we're going back to Delirious. I think Obsession actually kind of, like, deals with this a tiny bit. Like, in the sense of, it's like, yeah, even if things aren't going great with God, I still feel like I come and do some really strange worship, you know, music podcast on a Wednesday night. No matter how really spiritual I'm feeling at any given moment, I do have this kind of obsession with God, and it does enact in part of my life. So in some ways, I think that song actually does enact, like, yes, no matter what is going on, I still have this obsession, and I still can talk about it.
This is, I think, one of the reasons I like Good Good Father as a song, because it's just so bloody simple, right? Just any time you're feeling good, you're feeling bad, you're feeling really high in your faith, you're not feeling anything at all, you're feeling really low. Just saying, you're a good, good father. It's who you are. I'm loved by you. It's who I am. That kind of works anytime.
Yeah, it's true. Well, and that's the thing about, like, there's sort of the me songs, the you songs, and the, like, whatever other songs in worship, right?
The we songs,
yeah. And with a you song, those are kind of applicable to all situations because you're always, like, God is unchanging, right? So the things that you sing, you are whatever to God. Don't sing you are whatever, but whatever you're telling God.
It's really accurate.
Yeah.
It's really accurate.
I mean, I guess that's true. Yeah. Like, well, that's it. And whatever you say, like, you are X to God is going to be true no matter what, right?
Whether it's also really inclusive. It's really inclusive as well.
Yeah. That's it. And whereas, like, a me song is going to not only isolate people in the congregation who aren't feeling that day, but also, like, it might not feel true to you when you're singing it, right? Maybe you pull the songs for Sunday morning on Thursday night, and then by Sunday morning you're like, I'm not going to dance or sing or be mad for my king.
But will you go deeper and then run and fly?
Can you
hop and fly? Is that rewrite? Don't forget it.
I just figured out why he had those mixed metaphors. He wanted to cover all the bases. He's like, if you're going deeper, I'll start there. If you're flying higher, I'm going to go there later. If you're running, you're like, we're going to do it all.
What if you're stationary?
What's that? Oh, stationary. Oh, well, then you're in trouble.
Well, I guess so.
Yeah, you definitely can't be stationary. If there's one thing that the past, like, 20 minutes of this conversation has taught me, it's that being in a middle place is not acceptable.
Backsliding is even better than being stationary.
Yeah. Yeah, maybe moving somewhere.
Then you should go deeper if you're backsliding.
Well, and some people will try and theologize that, right? Like, they'll look at, like, Revelation, right? I can't remember which church it is.
Oh, the lukewarm. Yeah, especially hot or cold.
And I can't remember how many times, I lost count how many times people try to, you know, tell people you need to be hot or cold. It's like, no, I don't think you actually mean that. Because then you're saying you either need to be really for God or you need to be really for the devil.
Right.
It's like, I think that's, like, there's a message in there, but that's not it exactly.
Yeah.
And I think the lukewarmness, thinking about the mundane, one other thing is feeling torn. Like, so what do we do with worship songs? It makes me think about this situation as Christians, I believe we're just permanently stuck in, which is between believing that the kingdom has somehow already come and that the kingdom's not here and still coming. So we're always stuck in that weird sort of spot where it's mundane. It's ordinary time. Like, Jesus rose from the dead. He ascended to heaven. We're waiting for him to come back. So, like, we sort of, like, have this ministry of reconciliation, and we're trying to do it usually pretty poorly. But, you know, it's something still coming. That's great.
Right.
And so in some ways, that's what the worship conundrum is that we're like, you know, my life's just kind of whatever. Right. But every time I try and say something about God, it somehow is like pulling me somewhere outside of that. Mm-hmm. So in some ways, maybe that's fine.
Yeah, maybe.
Maybe what I'm trying to say is maybe we don't need mundane worship songs. But I think that with the songs that we do have that are sort of pushing us or pulling us in a mundane place, just can't imagine that we're somehow separated from that mundane, or that mundane is meaningless, or that mundane isn't important.
Right.
And I feel like this song, just to bring it back to what we're talking about with Simple Pursuit, I got the sense that that's what it was saying.
Right.
I feel like I want to take up a personal challenge, which is to write a mundane worship song.
That could be fun.
Yeah.
That could be our challenge for next episode.
We're doing Delirious next time.
Well, yeah, but we can open with a mundane worship song and then talk about Delirious for the rest of it.
Oh, I love it.
Because Delirious are really mundane. It's a perfectly themed. I don't believe I just said that.
I know, I was just...
It's a sacrilege.
I'm trying to think of some songs.
Blasphemous thing I've ever said.
Yeah. I love it. This is such a great idea.
So, confession.
Do we have to sing it?
Confession. Yeah. I could not tell you off the top of my head the title of any Delirious song because I am a small baby boy who was not a Christian at the time that you guys were.
So you picked a couple episodes, I Could Sing Your Love Forever.
Okay, is that Delirious?
That's Delirious.
I didn't know that.
You didn't know that?
I had no idea. Yeah,
you see, that's the problem. Delirious is so ingrained in our culture.
Yeah.
You know.
Yeah, so deep and deep in the Christian.
Very deeper culture. Into our culture.
Deeper. And it's higher, too. It flies.
And higher into our culture.
But can it take me higher?
Can it take me higher?
That's Creed. somehow I do know
same
Creed.
Era. same era. Same lyrical like, you know, metaphors.
They got it. Maybe they were friends.
Maybe they were.
That's not unlikely.
Scott. What if Martin Smith also did a sex tape like the lead singer of Creed?
Wait, is there a Scott Stapp sex tape?
I think there is.
Oh, no.
That's challenge number 3.
Watch that sex tape.
Avoid it like the plague.
While listening to Good Good Father?
And stare at an icon the whole time instead of watching.
If you survive the experience, please call us.
Yeah. So for next week, or, well, next episode, we're each going to try to write, like, let's say 2 verses and a chorus of a mundane worship song.
Yes.
And then we'll spend the rest of the episode talking about Delirious.
Yeah. And I think I need to stipulate as well that all of our songs need to have a pre-chorus and a post-chorus.
Okay. So 2 verses and
a pre-chorus, a chorus, and a post-chorus.
All right.
Just because we made fun of it today.
Yeah. Challenge accepted.
I might just call my, you know, I might just have a pre-chorus, a chorus, and a post-chorus. I skip the verses.
Hey, you know, however you interpret the challenge, I guess. Exactly. Up to you.
That's it.
Kate.
Sweet.
I don't know where we're at for time.
We're about 10 minutes away from an hour. So,
okay.
Yeah.
Can I bring up another song that I just want to share?
Sure.
You don't have to really go to town on it, but
yeah, yeah. That'll be our last thing. We'll go to not to town.
To not to town. Well, cause we just talked about like, we can talk about a song for half an hour.
That's
right?
True. Yeah.
So go to the suburbs.
Yeah. We'll hang out on the outskirts of town.
Okay. That sounds great. Yeah.
The shady district. Yeah. No one usually goes.
Yeah. You guys are awesome. This is a song. This is a song by Chris Tomlin, whom I love. In the Passions conference thing, is called White Flag. I don't know if you guys have heard it before. They actually have one of their albums titled White Flag. Right. So I thought it was maybe just like one of the throwaway songs, and I saw that, and I was like, oh, this is actually one they really tried to push.
Right.
Did a French person write it?
This is the thing. Oh man,
that took me a second.
Oh my goodness. So as a side note, I went to a conference at university, and there was a whole bunch of Europeans there, and there was a Pole, a German, a Belgian, somebody from France. So there was just like a whole bunch of Europe represented, and they were all ganging up on France and Belgium Belgium, actually, France started really taking to Belgium because, and it's just like, they went on for like an hour, you know, accusing each other of things that happened during the Second World War. It's like, this is amazing.
And I bet all these guys, yourself are a Nazi.
I'm 20.
This is so weird. And I was like, as a Canadian, I was like, I have no way to enter this conversation except for to come in and say, we're perfect and helpful. Anyways, okay. So White Flag. I just thought it was just, okay, I'll just read it. The title's awful, and that's what really caught my attention, White Flag. I really appreciate your French reference there. So this is Chris Tomlin. The battle rages on, a storm and tempest roar. We cannot win this fight inside our rebel hearts. We're laying down our weapons now. We raise our white flag. We surrender all to you, all for you. We raise our white flag. The war's over. Love has come. Your love has won. Here on this holy ground, you made a way for peace. Laying your body down, you took our rightful place. This freedom song is marching on. Then the chorus again. We raise our white flag. We surrender all to you, all for you. We raise our white flag. The war is over. Love has come. Your love has won. And then the bridge. We lift the cross. Lift it high. Lift it high. We lift the cross. Lift it high. Lift it high. And then it goes to the chorus again. I think I can't remember what it does after that.
Are we at war with God? Is that what's happening in this song? Are we at war with God and surrendering to him?
Your sinful heart is at war with God, Tom.
I guess.
You need to repent.
It just seems like a weird thing to focus on.
It's an awful song. It's very American because they're just so focused on flags. Anything that has a flag in it, I think that they really love it.
Yeah.
Weapons is also a very popular American Christian musical theme. Right. Laying down guns and stuff. Yeah.
It's funny because I brought along a song as well about the Lord being a warrior. I think we could do a whole other episode on military references in Christian songs.
Totally. We should write this stuff down, guys. Like, we have like 4 episodes now full, because that would be a great one.
I'll do. We'll probably reckon out 20, because we can probably do 19 on Delirious.
Okay.
We got to pick like one Delirious album to talk about.
Well, we'll talk about that the next time we have our, when we actually do
it.
But
yeah.
I feel like there's so many different ways we could go with Delirious. But so this song, that there's so many things that are wrong with this. Like, I mean, I don't know. I feel like also now, I'm Canadian, so I have a hard time entering into sort of racial issues in the States. But I feel like if you're having a conference, I think this one was in Atlanta. If you're having a conference in Atlanta and you're singing about a white flag, isn't that a little strange? Maybe.
Maybe.
I don't know if it strikes me because, like, Canada has taught me to be, like, uber sensitive about things that really don't matter. But it just seems like that would be like, why is this the center of attention? Why does it have to be a white flag? Why can't it be a beige flag?
I don't want to bring this up, but really, I think you were quite happy to enforce the patriarchy earlier with Good Good Father. It wasn't very Canadian nowadays with Justin Trudeau as prime minister.
Yeah.
And I mean, we're also under the monarchy that's currently headed up by a queen, so.
Yeah, it's true. There you go.
Yeah.
God save the queen.
So what are you doing with that patriarchy? Get out of here.
And then the other one thing that I really disliked about this song was we lift the cross, or it was more confusing. Like, we lift the cross, lift it high, lift it high. It kind of feels to me like, you're killing Jesus. That sort of, isn't that the image of you're lifting the cross? Like, Jesus was on the cross.
Well, right? Okay, here's what happened, right? We're at war with God. We kill Jesus, and then we realize what we did. And we surrender.
And
we
raise the white flag. And then we're okay.
Yeah, that's it.
And then we raise up the cross.
You know what? In some ways, actually, that's exactly what happened, isn't it?
Yeah. Well, that's exactly it. Maybe Chris Tomlin was channeling, like, first century Christians.
He just gets it.
But, you know, like,
so deeply.
He's so woke.
So.
But, you know, at Mass, during the, like, procession into the, like, and like into the in like at the beginning of the service, everyone walks to the altar carrying, like on a pole, a crucifix. They're like lifting the cross high, and that's actually maybe Chris Tomlin's inherently Catholic, but
doubt that.
I actually think that's yes, I do too. But I actually think that's actually quite a good thing to do. It's actually kind of like, in terms of talking about icons, it's quite amazing to say, no, the thing we're going to kind of parade in front of us and carry right in front of us is Jesus on the cross, God crucified. That's what we believe in. And that's something quite cool to lift high and sort of have lead us.
You know what's amazing? I'm beginning to like this song more after our conversation. Is that possible?
Well, yeah, that happens.
Not normally.
If I do remember a whole evening with you once, Blair, where we were slagging off a chapter of a book, in the end you came to a conclusion you really liked it.
Yeah,
I felt horribly betrayed. It's sort of like this now. You're feeling like, you know, now you maybe dislike it, and now you're trying to say, no, actually, I like it.
I don't. Okay, here, I'll say this. I don't like it because I'm pretty sure that's not what he meant. Like, that really, that's a great idea, Steve.
Oh, thank you so much.
Really great thought. Oh. I don't think that's what he meant, because that would be completely inconsistent with almost every other song he writes. It's just, he doesn't go that theologically deep in things. And I'm not trying to insult him with that. I think that he writes, like, that's the style he writes his songs to be, like, at a very surface level that a lot of people can kind of grab, mm-hmm. right? So I don't think that he's thinking that. I think he's like, yeah, cross, we're Jesus people. Let's raise it higher, and because we're surrendering. And it's just like a thoughtless. But it's like, when you think about it, it's like, well, Jesus says, I will be lifted up, right? Lifting up the cross is like the most horrible thing you could do to Jesus in some ways, right? But I like the idea of, like, the procession. I think there's something really deep there.
Yeah.
I was more thinking what you're saying about Chris Tomlin not going very deep in his songs. So I was thinking about maybe a good mundane worship song could be, you know, I want to go deeper, but Chris Tomlin won't take me there.
Oh, dear. That's great. Oh, Steve.
Oh, man.
I feel like that should be like the way we end this.
I think that's the joke we're going out on, yeah. Okay. Well, thanks for listening, guys. Remember to rate and review the show on iTunes. Hit subscribe on whatever you're listening to this on currently. It's up to you. And yeah, we'll see you next time when we talk about Delirious.
If you're enjoying Ichthyology and want more of Tom in your ears, check out the Up for Discussion podcast. Every week, Tom and his team of hilarious improvisers use audience-submitted questions to dive deep into every topic under the sun. Nothing is off-limits. With all kinds of great guests like Scott Evans, Hank Green, and Sabrina Cruz. One reviewer called it an underappreciated cult classic. Another reviewer called it a not very compelling product. Go check it out and see for yourself. The Up for Discussion podcast, wherever podcasts are sold.